Chapter 39, The Conquest of Bashan. After passing south of Edom, the Israelites turned northward toward the Promised Land. Their route now lay over a vast, elevated plain, swept by cool, fresh breezes, a welcome change from the parched valley. They pressed forward, buoyant and hopeful. The command had been given, "Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot." The same was repeated concerning the Ammonites, also descendants of Lot. The hosts of Israel soon reached the country of the Amorites. This strong, warlike people had crossed the Jordan, made war upon the Moabites, and gained a portion of their territory. The route to the Jordan lay directly through this territory, and Moses sent a friendly message to Sihon, the Amorite king, "Let me pass through thy land, thou shalt sell me meat for money, that I may eat, and give me water for money, that I may drink, only I will pass through on my feet." The answer was a decided refusal, and all the hosts of the Amorites were summoned to oppose the invaders. This formidable army struck terror to the Israelites. So far as skill in warfare was concerned, their enemies had the advantage. To all human appearance, a speedy end would be made of Israel. But Moses kept his gaze upon the cloudy pillar. The token of God's presence was still with them. At the same time, he directed them to do all that human power could do in preparing for war. Their enemies were confident that they would blot out the Israelites from the land. But from the possessor of all lands the mandate had gone forth to Israel, "Rise ye up, take your journey, and pass over the river Arnon. Behold, I have given into thine hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to possess it, and contend with him in battle. This day will I begin to put the dread of thee and the fear of thee upon the nations that are under the whole heaven, who shall hear report of thee, and shall tremble, and be in anguish because of thee." How God revealed his love to wicked nations. These nations on the borders of Canaan would have been spared had they not stood, in defiance of God's word, to oppose Israel. The Lord gave Abraham the promise, "In the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." God spared them 400 years to give unmistakable evidence that he was the only true God. All his wonders in bringing Israel from Egypt were known to them. They might have known the truth, but they rejected the light and clung to their idols. When the Lord brought his people a second time to the borders of Canaan, additional evidence of his power was granted those heathen nations. They saw that God was with Israel in the victory over King Arad and the Canaanites and in the miracle to save those perishing from the sting of the serpents. The Israelites in all their journeyings and encampments had done no injury to the people or their possessions. On reaching the border of the Amorites, Israel had asked permission only to travel directly through the country, promising to observe the same rules that had governed their intercourse with other nations. When the Amorite king refused and defiantly gathered his hosts for battle, their cup of iniquity was full, and God would now exercise his power for their overthrow. The Israelites crossed the river Arnon and advanced upon the foe. An engagement took place. The armies of Israel were victorious, and they were soon in possession of the country of the Amorites. The captain of the Lord's host vanquished the enemies of his people. He would have done the same 38 years before, had Israel trusted in him. The army of Israel eagerly pressed forward and soon reached a country that might well test their courage and faith in God. Before them lay the powerful kingdom of Bashan, crowded with great stone cities that to this day excite the wonder of the world, 70 cities, with high walls, gates, and bars, besides unwalled towns a great many. The houses were constructed of huge black stones, of such size as to make the buildings impregnable to any force brought against them. It was a country filled with wild caverns and rocky strongholds. The inhabitants, descendants from a giant race, were of marvelous size and strength, so distinguished for violence and cruelty as to be the terror of all surrounding nations. Ogi, the king, was remarkable for size even in a nation of giants. But the cloudy pillar moved forward, and the Hebrew hosts advanced to Edrei, where the giant king awaited their approach. Ogi had skillfully chosen the place of battle, the city of Edrei, situated on the border of a tableland rising abruptly from the plain and covered with jagged rocks. It could be approached only by narrow pathways, steep and difficult of ascent. In case of defeat, his forces could find refuge in that wilderness of rocks where it would be impossible for strangers to follow. Moses trusted God. Confident of success, the king came forth with an immense army upon the open plain. When the Hebrews looked on that giant of giants towering above the soldiers of his army, when they beheld the seemingly impregnable fortress behind which unseen thousands were entrenched, the hearts of many quaked with fear. But Moses was calm and firm. The Lord had said concerning the king of Bashan, "Fear him not, for I will deliver him, and all his people, and his land, into thy hands, and thou shalt do unto him as thou didst unto Sihon king of the Amorites." Not mighty giants nor walled cities, armed hosts nor rocky fortresses, could stand before the captain of the Lord's host. The Lord led the army, the Lord conquered in behalf of Israel. The giant king and his army were destroyed, and the Israelites soon took possession of the whole country. Thus was blotted from the earth that strange people who had given themselves up to abominable idolatry. Israel's fatal mistake. Many recalled the events which nearly 40 years before had doomed Israel to long desert wandering. The report of the spies concerning the promised land was in many respects correct. The cities were walled and very great and inhabited by giants. But they could now see the fatal mistake of their fathers in distrusting the power of God. This had prevented them from at once entering the goodly land. God had promised his people that if they would obey his voice, he would go before them and fight for them. He would drive out the inhabitants of the land. But now Israel must advance against alert and powerful foes and contend with well-trained armies that had been preparing to resist. Their fathers had signally failed. But the trial was now more severe than when God had commanded Israel to go forward. The difficulties had greatly increased since they refused to advance when bidden to do so. God still tests his people. And if they fail, he brings them again to the same point, and the second time the trial will be more severe than the first. The mighty God of Israel is our God. In him we may trust, and if we obey his requirements, he will work for us as he did for his ancient people. The way will sometimes be so barred by obstacles, apparently insurmountable, as to dishearten those who will yield to discouragement, but God is saying, "Go forward." The difficulties that fill your soul with dread will vanish as you move forward in the path of obedience, humbly trusting in God.